In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Last Friday, the second funnel deadline in the Iowa legislature. So this hour, we're taking stock of the notable bills that did not make that deadline, those that are still alive, some bills awaiting the signature of Governor Reynolds, joined this hour by three Iowa State House journalists, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. Kay is the news director of Radio Iowa. Welcome back to our program, Kay.
Thanks for having me.
Kathy Obradovich is with us as well, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Kathy, welcome back to you.
Great to be here, Ben.
And our own IPR's Katarina Sestarek, our state government reporter. Katarina, welcome to you.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. Well, let's start off, if we could, by talking about maybe some of the most significant bills that did not make this funnel deadline. And for those perhaps not acquainted or need to be reminded, these bills that are alive did meet the requirements of this second funnel deadline. Those dead, so to speak, have not. However, with a caveat, there are still ways the legislature can resurrect so-called dead proposals. But let's start off with some of the more significant ones who did not make this hurdle. And I'd like to go around to each of the three of you to ask which ones you would pick out as most significant that did not make it thus far. Kay Henderson, may I start with you? What will you point to as something that met a dead end that is significant to Iowans?
Well, I'll just pick a couple quickly here. One, in 2018, Governor Reynolds expressed support for changing the law regarding birth control so that women could more easily access it at the pharmacy counter. That has again failed to clear the Republican-led legislature. And then secondarily, something that you and I and everybody else complains about every March, they still can't pass a bill about daylight saving time. The bill cleared a subcommittee, and it still is languishing in the Iowa legislature.
Mm-hmm. And that daylight savings time would, should it receive support at some point in the future, would do what? Would we be, isn't it Arizona that dances outside the lines and doesn't,
right.
doesn't
there
do
two,
that?
There, right. There are two states that do that. And there is a move in Congress to introduce this concept. Congress has never acted. The bill that cleared a subcommittee in the Senate this year would have had Iowa stay at standard time if surrounding states did so as well. So we would have sort of a zone of the same time with our neighboring states. And it let those decisions happen over a 10-year period. And the similar legislation actually has been introduced in Nebraska as well.
Mm-hmm. A few more words, Kay, to this, because Governor Reynolds was really behind this bill on birth control access. And I believe, if I'm remembering some poll results correctly, the majority of Iowans are in favor of the proposal that would have allowed Iowa adults to obtain birth control pills at pharmacies without receiving a prescription at a clinic, right?
Right. And it passed the Iowa Senate overwhelmingly in 2019 with only three dissenting votes, but it failed when it reached the House. It was reintroduced this year and just didn't clear that final hurdle. There are critics, even among Democrats. Senator Claire Selcy voted for the proposal a couple of years ago when it was debated in the Senate, but said she had some concerns because she personally had an adverse reaction to a prescription for birth control at one point in her life. And so did see the value with checking in with a doctor when you renew your prescription.
Mm, okay. Some important background there. Kathy Obradovich, let me go to you and have you point out a bill or two that met a dead end that you see as significant.
Well, I'll start with mentioning another one that Governor Reynolds had identified as a priority for her. It goes to show you that just because the legislature is the same party as the governor, that the governor doesn't get everything that he or she wants. In this case, she was trying again to get a constitutional amendment to automatically restore the voting rights of people who had felonies on their record. This bill had made it through at least one chamber. But there was a lot of argument among Republican lawmakers about limiting who could get their voting rights back. They didn't like just opening the door for everyone. And maybe because the governor went ahead and signed an executive order that allowed automatic voting right restoration in the 2020 election, it took the pressure off perhaps for lawmakers to go on and work on that bill. The other one that I'll just mention, because I think it had significance, even though it didn't pass, was banning tenure at state universities. This has been a Republican priority of one form or another for a while. Lately, lawmakers have been getting really upset about controversial First Amendment issues, where, in particular, conservative speech had been censured or limited at state universities. And so they've zeroed back in on tenure. Well, it made it all the way to the House calendar, but the House did not vote on it. A lot of concern, though, about the effect on business, the effect on recruiting high-quality faculty to the university. And every time that bill comes up, the people who are opponents argue that it has really a limiting effect, even though it doesn't pass.
Right. And we still have some related legislation alive, don't we, that is something to the effect of freedom of speech in our universities, correct, Kathy?
Yeah, there's a bill that requires First Amendment training.
That's it.
And that bill, as it came out of the House, also combines there's a combination of bills, one of which is controversial that limits diversity training, and there's a list of divisive concepts that you can't teach in any kind of government or school diversity training program. There's a separate bill, however, dealing with First Amendment training. That's a relatively neutral bill, I think it probably is it's also bipartisan, and that one, you know, I think probably has a better chance. Yeah, the House passed the bill 97-1. So, so the Senate is doing its own thing on that. But I think that is something that more directly addresses some of the First Amendment issues that we've seen at universities.
Kathy, last Friday, I guess it was, I had your State House journalist colleague, James Q. Lynch of the Gazette, on, and we talked about this bill. And I think, if I'm remembering his sort of takeaway, is that perhaps this was more or less a shot across the bow, perhaps not intended to ban tenure, but to catch people's attention and have a desired effect of some reform, a warning to faculty about the way they would treat speech in the classroom. Do you think that's the case?
I think that's the way it's been intended in the past. And I think the bill has gotten a little bit farther now. And last week, House Speaker Pat Grassley said that they might still continue to talk about ways to limit tenure and not go for an all-out ban. Mm. So are they looking for leverage a little bit? Yeah, I think they are. And again, you know, just even talking about this can have a chilling effect on recruitment of faculty. So I think that just the fact that they continue to talk about it, there will continue to be possibly an effect. And, you know, University of Iowa is trying to recruit a president right now.
Yes, yes, very good points. If you've just joined us, we're talking, getting an update of what's happening in the Iowa legislature with Kathy Obradovich of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, and our own Katarina Sistark. If you would like to join our conversation, we're going to be trying to survey a number of bills that have met a dead end or are still alive or on the governor's desk awaiting her signature. Join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us if you like, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Katarina Sistarek, let me turn to you and have you point out a bill that met, at least for this session, an end that you think is significant.
There are a couple of things that had bipartisan support in the House, but then did not get advanced by the Senate in time for this deadline. One of those is related to childcare. The House passed 8 childcare-related bills trying to address both improving access and affordability of childcare for Iowans. It's something that's been a big priority for House Republicans last year. Governor Reynolds said it's a priority this year, and business groups are really pushing for this. And the Senate only advanced 3 of those 8 bills through their committees ahead of the funnel. House Speaker Pat Grassley has said that some of those might become part of the negotiations of closing down session. Some of them deal with tax credits. That's something that could potentially be worked into some legislation at a later date in this session, still, even if they didn't make it through the funnel. But that's something that, you know, it's still unclear if Senate Republicans are going to get on board with changing the tax code in that way. And then the other thing that kind of sticks out is telehealth parity. So that's having insurance companies reimburse healthcare providers at the same rate as for telehealth visits as they do for in-person visits. And that's something, obviously, during the pandemic, people are using telehealth more than ever. And this is something that had support, bipartisan support in the House, but it wasn't taken up in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Kay Henderson, weigh in on this child care situation, the child care proposals here, the governor behind this. Iowans behind this, certainly a need there to find a solution. Why does it find itself where it is now, not quite getting done?
Well, as Katarina pointed out, there are a couple of the proposals that did pass the Senate that could be procedurally still alive and become law, most notably, as she mentioned, the tax credits for businesses that provide child care benefits for employees. That's something that senators could pass because this deadline that we're focused on today is for policy bills. Mm. Bills that deal with taxing and spending are not included. The other big part of this child care discussion is something called the child care cliff, whereby Iowans who are employed, but they make so little that they qualify for child care assistance, oftentimes don't accept a raise in their hourly pay because they would lose their state child care support. And that so-called cliff is something that legislators have talked about for several years, and that is something that could obviously be introduced and included in a discussion about the Department of Human Services budget in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Obradovich, let me turn to you to talk about or update us on where we are in education, specifically these proposals of having to do with expanding school choice through scholarships, having tuition, be able to pay tuition to a private school using some public funds. Where is that right now?
So it got a little bit complicated. The Senate passed a whole package of the school choice bills that Governor Reynolds had requested. And the House was not on board with one of the significant pieces, which was the scholarships for students to move to private school, and you know, taxpayers would be paying part of their tuition and expenses for them to move to private schools. That was not getting approval. It wasn't getting support in the House. But there are some bills that are really advancing related to that, including making it easier for students to open enroll, and also this charter school bill, which is still alive. And this would allow outside groups that are not part of local school boards to create charter schools and get taxpayer money from any student who moves from public school into those charter schools. So it's a controversial bill because it impacts public schools. But it is, you know, I think that it might have more support in among some rural legislators who were looking at the private school part of this and saying, well, we don't have any private schools in our district. Yeah. So, you know, we don't see how this would benefit us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an interesting point, because in our rural school districts, it really doesn't potentially benefit those interested in a private school. It's in the more urban areas that you're saying that this would really be a choice for parents.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think that there's some concern. I mean, Iowa does have a charter school law right now, but it's really public schools that are in charge of those. And I think that the proponents of this are wanting to give parents a choice outside of the local school board system. A lot of concern on the opponent side about the level of accountability for how this taxpayer money is being spent in charter schools, and also, you know, just to make sure that they have to comply with some of the same rules, like anti-discrimination rules and some of those things that public schools have to abide by. Mm-hmm.
Katerina Sestarek, I wonder if I can turn to you to update us on the state's mental health system and funding for that being discussed in the legislature. What's going on there?
The Senate has advanced a very large bill that would shift the spending on mental health services from property taxes, which currently funds the system, to fully state funding. And the bill also does a bunch of other things related to property taxes, but this and some tax credits as well. This is something that, you know, mental health advocates have been saying for a long time. The system needs more funding, and we need to find a sustainable source of funding, because it's just not enough for some places, especially as legislature in the past few years has mandated that mental health regions provide more services, both for adults and children. So obviously they're going to need some more money to be able to do that. And this plan, there are some concerns from both Democrats and mental health advocates about shifting fully to state funding, because that could kind of leave it, you know, if the state goes through a rough budget year, they may cut mental health funding. At least that's the fear. And this is also a plan that doesn't necessarily have support from House Republicans at all at this point. So it's not clear, you know, what they'll land on in the end of the session, if mm-hmm. anything.
Kathy Obradovich, on mental health funding, is it clear to you where this is going, or any of the critical factors to consider?
It's not at all clear where this is going. And just a reminder that last year, the governor came forward with a pretty bold and aggressive plan to actually raise the state sales tax by a penny per dollar and fund not only mental health, but a significant share of that money would also go to environmental programs and outdoor recreation. That bill, in part, just the idea of raising the state sales tax was not palatable to Republicans, especially in an election year. And then COVID tended to cut that argument short. The governor has at least put that plan on hold, if not abandoned it altogether. It still leaves the problem that we're facing where these mental health regions, there are 14 of these mental health regions in the state, they've got until July 1st to start putting some of these new state mandated programs together. And as Katarina said, they don't have the money in some of these regions to do those services that are really critically needed across the state. So, you know, we're going to have to figure out, and, you know, I think that having the state take over the plan, take over the funding of this is as much about cutting property taxes as it is about funding the system. Mm-hmm. House Speaker Pat Grassley made that a similar comment last week. And, you know, I think he's also concerned, and he thinks Republicans are concerned about, you know, having all of the money go to these regions, but then the state wouldn't have a significant control over how the money is spent. So I think there's a lot of issues here. This is a very complex problem. I have a feeling the easiest thing for lawmakers to do is nothing. And honestly, I think that will probably be the default this year. If I were going to put money on it, I would say they're not going to do anything.
Kay, is that where you'd put your money?
Well, as Kathy mentioned, House Speaker Pat Grassley last week addressed this. And another point that he made was that the system is incredibly complicated. For example, the people who work in the system, many of them are county employees. So if the state picks up the tab, do those people become state employees? Those sorts of details need to be worked out in any final plan that develops. The other thing that Speaker Grassley said was that, you know, this is a system that developed over a period of several years, and just snapping your fingers and changing it to a state-run system without thinking through all the details and ramifications is probably something that's just too big of a task. It is related to property taxes. The Farm Bureau is really in favor of this move and has been in favor of this move for several years. To the extent of, in a very surprising comment during a Senate subcommittee hearing on this topic, someone from the mental health community said that they were in favor of this bill because they're frankly just tired of competing against the Farm Bureau whenever they discuss the need for mental health funding, and have thrown it back in their face, the idea that, you know, this is about property taxes and not for the people who need the services, and lobbying against the Farm Bureau, which is a huge interest group that Republican lawmakers are very much interested in listening to as they make their decisions.
Okay, we'll be back after a short break to continue catching up on what's happening in the Iowa legislature. The second funnel deadline occurred last week. We're talking about bills, significant bills that died, not making it through that funnel, those still alive. What's being hashed out in our state capitol? Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer back with Kathy Obradovich, Kay Henderson, and Katarina Sestarik. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
The Iowa legislature is in session.
Let's just go around. We got a lot of people.
There are proposals for constitutional amendments, education, taxes, the budget, and many policy bills.
So what needs to be fixed?
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, is following the session.
I want to thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
I'm John Pemble. Subscribe to the podcast or hear Under the Golden Dome on our website, iowapublicradio.org.
The way you get your news may have changed during this pandemic, but you still need to know what's going on in our state every day. Iowa Public Radio News has you covered. Subscribe to our new podcast, Hear First, and start your day equipped with the essential local news you need to know, delivered in under 15 minutes, weekdays by 7 a.m. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters, learn about what's going on at the Statehouse and on the ground in your community. Subscribe to Hear First today wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, getting an update on what's happening at the Iowa State House with our Iowa State House journalists, Kathy Obradovich of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, and IPR's Katarina Sestarik. If you'd like to join us with a question or a concern about legislation that you're particularly interested in, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's think back about a year ago when the country was engulfed in racial justice protests. Iowa, not the only state that at a state level dealt with the repercussions of those protests. And Katarina Sestarik, tell us what has, in terms of legislation still alive, perhaps that has not made it through the funnel, what has happened in terms of racial justice, social justice, and policing legislation at the Iowa State House?
Governor Reynolds proposed this big bill that she called the Back the Blue Act. And that was something that legislators never took up in full. And it included a ban on racial profiling and tracking that the data from police stops. That part never advanced in the legislature this year. It also included things like raising penalties for protest-related crimes, increasing police protections, things like that, that sort of have advanced in bits and pieces in the legislature. Ahead of last week's legislative deadline, some of those bills died. One of those was a bill that would have penalized cities and counties that reduce their police budgets by pulling almost all state funding from those local governments. So that died. And then there was also a bill that had higher penalties for things like rioting and unlawful assembly. That bill died. But one that survived would codify qualified immunity, which is liability protections for police. That was a bill that passed the Senate, and then the House ended up advancing it. And now there's an amendment to that bill that would add some of those other things back in, like higher penalties for protest-related crimes, liability protections for drivers who accidentally hit protesters who are in the road, and some other things related to that. Would all be it now in this very big police-related bill that could get debated on the House floor in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Kay and Kathy, I want to ask about your takeaways. Considering, Kay, you first, considering where we were in 2020 with these massive protests across the country and many, many in Iowa as well, what are your takeaways when you look at the legislation that has been produced, that has passed, and that has that legislation related to racial justice and policing that has failed? Kay.
Well, I'll address the racial profiling element of the governor's package. This had been something that senators had been talking about, and the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican Senator Brad Zahn of Urbandale, had advanced in the past, but had always hit the roadblock of not clearing the Iowa House. So it's unclear at all if the governor plans to exert any of her, you know, bully pulpit resources to try to get that inserted in the bill. It doesn't appear that she intends to do that. But it does appear that some of these other elements that Katarina just described may be revived and added to the bill to make it sort of very much like what the governor proposed in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Kathy?
And I'll just add that last year, Ben, the legislature did pass some limits, I guess, on policing, including, you know, banning chokeholds of the type that ultimately led to George Floyd's death, the man who was killed at the hands of police up in Minneapolis. And that was after summer protests. There was widespread bipartisan support. In fact, that bill passed both chambers of the legislature unanimously. which is pretty remarkable for something that is, you know, that has a lot of potentially controversial elements to it. This year is not like that. While there has been some bipartisan support for some of the bills that Katarina and Kay wrote out, it is by no means the type of thing that is unanimous. And there's a lot of, I think, disappointment from Democrats that the racial profiling element is not part of this bill. And in fact, that there are elements that are being especially pushed by House Republicans that punish people who are protesting. So, you know, I think that those elements now, some of the members of the Black Caucus in the House have described that as backlash. They felt like they made progress last year. And now, you know, people are looking to sort of swing the pendulum the opposite direction. I think that this, regardless of what happens this session, this conversation is not going to be over with in Iowa.
Yeah, Kathy, let me follow up with you and ask you, how much does this sort of change from 2020 to 2021 that you just described? How does the January 6th insurrection fit there and the aftermath of that, having had lawmakers on this program here, Republican lawmakers, saying, well, yes, yeah, sure, there was January 6th, but there was also the violence in these racial protests across the country. And we have to always say the large majority of those protests across the country in 2020 were very peaceful. Kathy, do you think there's a tie-in there in sort of the aftermath and how the narrative developed between violence on the left and violence on the right and insurrection on our Capitol?
Yeah, so the discussion about the January 6th insurrection hasn't really come up very much in the discussion about these police bills. You know, lawmakers in a different context have aired concerns about the Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, how what they think are the philosophical underpinnings of that movement and some of those issues. Even when we're discussing the gun legislation, for example, I didn't hear much about the Capitol insurrection as they were going through this process. But I do think that, you know, as the Derek Chauvin trial is going on right now in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. they're also maybe concerned that there might be more protests yet this summer around the country and in Iowa, depending on what that verdict is.
Mm-hmm. Kay, what are your thoughts on this matter?
Well, it is interesting in that, as I mentioned before, the governor made this proposal, and then she has not been very public about how she may be disappointed or thinking about how she might recraft it to get legislators to pass it again next year. People may remember that the governor was very vocal about the restoration of felon voting rights in 2020. She talked about it as her second chance agenda. And as Kathy mentioned in the first half hour of our program, that is continuing to hit a roadblock. I think if you were to, because in my opinion, the only reason, the only way that this would advance would be if the governor would be to step out and make some public statements about this. I don't think that's going to happen because mm-hmm. I think her priority right now are education related elements of her agenda.
Mm-hmm. Related to policing, we had the governor sign legislation last week, I believe, that as of, I think, beginning July 1st, adults in Iowa will be allowed to purchase and carry concealed handguns without first obtaining a permit. Katarina, a comment on this bill. That is a significant change in our gun laws.
Right. And critics are very concerned that it opens up a big loophole in background checks because now a permit won't be required to buy a handgun when you're buying through a private sale. So if you're buying from a neighbor or a random person, you don't have to have a permit to do that. And since you're not at a gun store, at a licensed dealer, you don't have to get a background check. Republicans say they think there's enough protections in the bill to protect against people who might have bad intentions with a firearm from getting it. But I think there's, you know, it doesn't say in the bill that you have to get a background check to buy a gun from a private sale. And then with that, you know, Governor Reynolds signed this bill into law on Friday. And she in the past has expressed support for the permitting system as it exists for now until July 1st. But then, you know, released a statement when she signed the bill saying that she's, you know, protecting the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. And there have been, you know, in the past few years, pretty much every year, there's a bill to do that would take away the permitting requirements, but it hasn't advanced very far in the past. And then this year they got it through.
Well, the final 10 minutes of our conversation as we look at what's happening in the Iowa legislature with Katarina Sestarek of Iowa Public Radio, Kathy Obradovich of the Capital Dispatch, and Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. Some concluding remarks in a moment, but I wanted to point you in the direction for comment about, well, it wouldn't be spring, would it, with the flowers popping up, the grass greening, and unless we talked about the bottle bill, and then also noticed in our ditches, now that the grass is not really grown, that we have, you know, plastic bottles in our ditches along the roadways that aren't covered by our present bottle bill. Kathy, comment on this. This is how many years in a row have we talked about the bottle bill and really the failure to revise it from its, what, 1970s origins? Is that right, Kathy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've been covering the legislature since the early 90s, and it has been a perennial issue all of that time. The grocery stores have continued to come back year after year and say, we want dirty bottles and cans out of our stores. They do not want to be a redemption center for dirty bottles and cans. And they are the ones driving a lot of the conversation. As you mentioned, as the years have gone by, there's a lot more containers that are not covered by the nickel deposit. And so therefore, there's not an incentive for people to pick up litter and take those water bottles, for example, back to the store to get a nickel. And, you know, also, as the years have gone by, the handling fee that the people like from redemption centers and the people who handle these bottles and cans to have them be recycled, that's a penny per container, and it's just not covering the cost anymore. So the cost of doing nothing is getting higher and higher as the years go on, because the whole economy created by that nickel deposit is just not keeping up with the times. Meanwhile, there are more people who are just recycling their containers and not redeeming that nickel. And how many of those nickels and who keeps that money is starting to become an issue. And that's kind of new in this discussion this year, is, you know, the distributors are keeping all this money and they're not telling lawmakers how much money there is. And so lawmakers are starting to get really curious about that and incorporate that into discussion as a possible source of money to help fund this, you know, anti-littering economy that was created by the bottle deposit.
Right. And so when you say distributors, Kathy, you don't mean grocery stores, you mean
like the beer distributors, people like that, it's an interesting question. They argue that there's not much money involved there, but lawmakers have not succeeded so far in getting enough people to come to the table to agree on legislation that would at least require reporting of how much money that is.
Right. And it's so interesting, as this has developed over the decades, that even those of us who've lived here for decades, now journalists aside, probably discussing this, if you would ask an Iowan about redemption and what bills can be have a deposit, which do not, most Iowans will not know that. And it's really strange. Kay Henderson, perhaps you can comment on this. It has to be a carbonated beverage for it to have a deposit. That's why we find all our plastic water bottles out there that are not carbonated and other other types of drink bottles. It is the carbonation, that not the material that the product is made out of, the packaging, that determines whether it has a deposit.
Right. And I would note, Ben, that last week there was a rather interesting district court ruling that dismissed a grocery industry challenge of how state officials are interpreting the bottle bill requirements for redeeming these nickel deposits on the empty beverage containers. The grocery industry, as Kathy mentioned, wants to get these containers out of their stores. The discussion among legislators sort of centers around convenience. How do we either encourage the establishment of more redemption centers, which Kathy mentioned, the places that accept the empty bottles and cans that aren't a grocery store or some sort of retail establishment? How do we finance that? And then, as Kathy mentioned, this whole discussion about how much is not redeemed. There was some discussion in a Senate subcommittee meeting last week that about 64% of the containers that are covered by Iowa's so-called bottle bill were redeemed in 2017. That's about double what the national average is for those containers, but it is declining. And even among supporters of the so-called bottle bill, like Senator Pam Yoakum, she's concerned by the decline in the number of people who are choosing to redeem, go back and get their nickel deposit back. And she also cited some sort of figure that in 2017, there was $35 million worth of deposits that weren't redeemed. Now, she didn't cite where that came from, and I wasn't able to find that. But as Kathy mentioned, there's this idea among legislators that there's a whole lot of money out there that is not being redeemed by Iowans, and they would like to redirect it in some fashion to some other legislative priority, perhaps even water quality.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we'll see how many more springs we talk about the bottle bill or if it finds a solution this year. We have about 5 minutes left with Kay Henderson and Kathy Obradovich and Katarina Sestarik. I want to turn to each of you. So many things we didn't get a chance to talk to. Perhaps highlight something that you'll be watching in the coming weeks or just generally the last month or so of the session. Kathy, what will you have your eyes on that we haven't perhaps talked about this hour?
One of the governor's main priorities this year is to expand broadband. The pandemic really highlighted, I think for a lot of Iowans around the state, the fact that not everyone has equal access to high-speed internet. And of course, as schools were going remote, that became a critical issue. And it's also an issue for smaller towns where they'd like people to locate there, but they, you know, the jobs are in the bigger cities like Des Moines. So they want people to be able to telecommute to mm-hmm. work and still enjoy the lifestyle of a small town in Iowa. So the governor proposed a pretty aggressive plan that would invest $450 million over 3 years. So about $150 million a year. They had some arguing with the industry about how fast the broadband would have to be to qualify for state grants to help build these systems out. But I think that they're moving along there. I think they still have to haggle a little bit over exactly how much money they're going to put in between the House and Senate. I would be very surprised if they don't get something done on this. Mm-hmm.
Kay Henderson, a minute, 60 seconds for you before we go on your thoughts looking forward.
Well, looking forward to what Katarina has to say. I will say that there's a showdown over taxes. Senate Republicans have proposed several different tax cutting ideas, and those are sort of stalled in the House. So I think what we're all watching is to see if any of them emerges and have some sort of consensus and can pass in the House.
Mm-hmm. And Kay, our session runs officially. We know it can run over officially till when?
I guess I haven't looked at the calendar. Kathy, do you remember?
Well, it goes until the end of April. But of course, that's just when lawmakers stop getting paid. They can keep working after that if they haven't come to agreements. But end of the month is when their 110-day stipend runs out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And to our own Katerina Sestarek here, your eyes looking to the coming weeks, what will you have your eyes on in particular?
Well, it's time for the legislature to figure out what the state budget is going to be. So as Kathy talked about, broadband is going to be a big piece of that, but also what they do with mental health funding, if anything, how the budget overall for the entire state plays out. They're also going to be looking at maybe some increased funding for the Department of Corrections after the killing of two prison workers at Anamosa. I think there'll be a lot more interesting budget discussions to come.
Very good. So much to keep track of, and we are sure glad the three of you are there at the Iowa State House keeping track of it, reporting on it. Katerina Sestarek, IPR state government reporter, Kay Henderson, news director of Radio Iowa, and Kathy Obradovich, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Kathy, Kay, Katerina, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River was produced today by Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. And tomorrow, we'll listen back to a favorite program from last year. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.